In college, I had a good friend of mine who was always concerned about how he looked. And we used to make fun of this guy every now and then because you would see Walter at different times during the day with different outfits on. And, you know, you'd be walking, he'd have a red shirt on in the morning, and then he'd have a blue polo on in the afternoon, and then he'd have a sweatshirt on in the evening, and all these different things. And it was funny because you could almost guarantee different activities during the day would necessitate Walter's changing outfits. And so he would have a basketball outfit, and then if he got dirty, he would go get a shower and get another outfit on for class or something like that. And always smell good. You could always guarantee that he was clean, smelled good. And we used to laugh and joke with him a lot about that. But I have a feeling that he was afraid that he would be caught wearing the wrong thing at the wrong time. When I was growing up, my parents, for the majority of my childhood, didn't have a whole lot of money. My dad, when I was young, went through a major layoff at a research laboratory where he made pretty good money, and it was in his career field. Went through a series of jobs after that and really got frustrated with the corporate lifestyle and wanted some more security and stability for his family. So he took a job at the state, but doing so kind of knocked him down quite a bit in his expected income. And so my parents struggled for some years there when I was young to make, you know, enough money to support our family, to provide for our education and things like that. And I remember as a kid having to wear hand-me-downs a lot. Anybody else remember this? Anybody have that experience? And so I didn't have a whole lot of new clothes growing up. Most of what I remembered was like 5-year-old, 10-year-old clothes from somebody else's kid who I got to wear. So I was still wearing 80s when 80s was out. And I remember some of the outfits that I had. You know, you probably look at the picture and thought, oh, was that 1980 something? No, it was 90 something. You know, he's wearing hand-me-downs. But I remember being so excited when I finally did get a new pair of Nike basketball shoes. I'll never forget it. My parents, I don't know if they just splurged on me, but bought a new pair of Nike. I never had a pair of Nike basketball shoes, and they were the really cool Nike basketball shoes with the air cushion, the little airbag in the back, you know, that means you're legit. Like, you're not really wearing Nikes if they don't have the little airbag in the back. And so I remember being so concerned with keeping my shoes clean. And I must have looked so weird. All the other kids were, you know, just running through mud and doing whatever, and I'm like running around mud puddles and trying not to get my shoes dirty. And as soon as I went in the house after I was done, I would scrub those shoes, and I would, you know, the white outsoles, the foam that always gets nasty looking, I would scrub those with Comet and in the utility sink in the basement, making sure that my shoes didn't look dirty. And for different reasons, I think about my friend in college and myself and my childhood. And for different reasons, I think we were both afraid that we were caught wearing something that wasn't nice enough, wasn't good enough. In a lot of ways, Walter and I acted very similarly. We live in a time and an age where appearances matter. And if you say appearances don't matter, you'd be lying. We all care what we look like to a certain extent, right? And if you say, no, I don't really care, I just kind of throw on something, well, are you wearing pants today? Yeah. You probably care what you're looking like, otherwise it wouldn't have mattered. You would have walked in here with whatever you had on when you woke up. Which, never mind. But, so to a great extent, all of us are in the same boat. Maybe different levels of caring, right? Maybe different levels of concern about what we look like or what we wear, but we're all concerned about what we appear to be in front of other people. We do things in an effort to increase people's perception about us. We talk a certain way. When you're with your friends at work, you probably talk a little differently. Hopefully not a too lot of it differently, but you probably talk differently than you do around people that, you know, your family or your friends here at church or different things. Different stories get shared. Different kinds of jokes get told. And it's not a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a good or bad. We're not talking, you know, wrong or right here. We're just talking about increasing our perception in front of people and maintaining a certain level of appearance, whether it be through the way that we talk or the way that we dress or the way that we act. All of these things come into play. And we even do it here in church, if you think about it. We drop names of certain people in front of others in front of church here, and we make sure people know that we teach the such and such class, right? Or I'm a deacon of, or I'm a ministry leader of, or I'm the elder of this church over here. And so we do this. Whether or not we realize it, we are in this kind of a mentality often enough. Making sure that people know I'm doing the right things, I'm living the right way, I'm saying the right things so that you don't doubt where I am and who I'm supposed to be associated with. The Bible was written in what scholars call an honor and shame culture. Best way to describe this, if you're familiar with Japanese or Asian cultures or Middle Eastern cultures, this would be very similar to what you would find in those parts of the world where appearances matter a lot. And a lot of the things that happen in those cultures don't make sense to us. In World War II, our soldiers were confronted with the idea of Harry Caray, suicide killings, when there would be a group of Japanese soldiers that they would capture. A lot of these men would often commit suicide right there before they could be captured. And that doesn't make sense to us, but in their culture, it was a shameful thing to submit to defeat. And so it was better to kill yourself rather than submit to defeat. It's an honor and shame thing. Maintaining the honor of the family, of the individual. A lot of times people in Middle Eastern cultures will do things that don't make sense to us. When a woman has sex outside of marriage in an honor and shame culture, in some Middle Eastern cultures, that's grounds for stoning. And it's not so much to punish the offense as it is to maintain the honor of the family, because you've just brought dishonor on the family. And so something that not always makes sense to us, but often does in other cultures, here in the passage that we're going to talk about this morning, actually does intersect. Because even though we don't live in an honor and shame culture, we still live in a culture where appearances matter. And anything that we can do to impressively demonstrate to other people at key moments, our abilities or our faith matters. And so bonus points in an honor and shame culture in the passage that we're going to read would be given to you if you could demonstrate these aspects of your faith in front of people to increase your honor for yourself and for your family. And so Matthew 6, 1 through 8, 16 through 18 deals with an odd kind of showing off. Showing off in ways like praying and fasting and giving. Maybe a different kind of showing off than you did with the girls on the playground at school, in elementary school, right? Probably not the types of things that you used to do when you were a kid to get attention, but still nonetheless a means of self-promotion. Jesus says, "Beware of practicing your righteousness before men, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven." The irony of the verse is that the gain that is being sought, a reward from someone else, will not be given to anyone seeking a public reward from the Father. Jesus says, "When you give to the needy, sound no trumpet." And scholars debate, was there really a trumpet? Some scholars say, yes, there was a trumpet that was sounded when people would give. And some people say, no, it's just a metaphorical statement that Jesus is making. But either way, Jesus says the hypocrites give to seek attention. Hypocrites. We use that phrase, that word a lot, don't we? Hypocrites is a Greek word. It's from the Greek theater. It was a word used to describe actors who would wear these different types of masks. If you've ever seen this, the symbol for acting and for theater, it's those two masks, the sad and the happy face together. And there's a reason for that, because in Greek theater, oftentimes people couldn't see very well, and they were a long ways away. And so just like we do with makeup and things on stage today, actors would wear masks to make sure people knew what kind of expression they were having at the moment they were supposed to have on stage, if it was a happy face or a sad face or a laughing or crying. And so Jesus uses this word for acting. The actors, the hypocrites, will have no reward for their good deeds. The theologian Alfred Plummer said it like this: giving to the needy in order to receive publicity is not giving at all. It's paying for human approval. Instead, Jesus says, when you give, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And then he continues on in another vein of the same kind of discussion. He says, and when you pray, you must not be like the hypocrites. There's our word again. Because they love to be seen and heard. Any moment that could have been an opportunity for someone to gain attention, gain approval in a public eye, on the street corner, in the synagogue, anywhere they'll get a hearing, they use it. In the Jewish faith, similar to what we see in Muslim cultures today, where there were separate times of the day to pray, it was common in the Jewish faith to do this as well. And so you would have scheduled times of the day where you were supposed to be praying. And so sometimes people would, at the scheduled time to pray, stop what they were doing and pray in the middle of the street. You could imagine what this could be like, right? Somebody's walking down the street with their groceries. Oh, time to pray. Excuse me for a second. Oh, Lord! Thank you, Father. These displays in the public eye that became these ridiculous ways of gaining attention that were really not concerned with prayer at all, but were more concerned with the way that somebody would increase others' perception of them. Instead, Jesus says, go into your room and shut the door. He says, I don't care if this is your time to pray. If this is your time to pray, go in your room and shut the door. And your heavenly Father who sees in secret will reward you. He says, do not heap up empty phrases like the Gentiles. The Gentiles, the pagan people, were known for these big words and using these big words and repeating phrases over and over and over again in an effort to try to gain the attention and the approval of the God that they were trying to pray to. And you might remember in Scripture there's a story in the Old Testament that fits this perfectly. 1 Kings chapter 18. Elijah challenges the prophets of Baal to a competition on Mount Carmel. And he calls the prophets up, sets a big sacrifice out in the middle of the opening, douses it with water and says, okay, let's see who's God. Sets the sacrifice on fire first. Prophets, take it away. Prophets all day long, it says, danced and prayed and shouted and screamed and cut themselves and did all these sorts of ridiculous displays of emotion trying to get their God to hear them. And it's actually a funny passage if you want to go back and read it, 1 Kings 18, because Elijah actually starts making fun of them. He says, oh, maybe he's out for a walk, or maybe he's going to the bathroom. Maybe he can't hear you right now. Jesus says, no, 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 don't use that kind of language with me. Instead, pray like this. And then he goes into the Lord's Prayer. A simple, to the point, but effective prayer. And then he concludes with, and when you fast, don't look like it. Anybody else get hangry? You know what I mean when I say hangry? I get irritated. Hungry. When I'm hungry, I'm angry, so it's hangry. I get irritated when I miss a meal. I don't do that well. My stomach always reminds me when it's time to eat. I always laughed at the people who say, oh, I forgot to eat lunch. What do you mean you forgot to eat lunch? How do you forget to eat lunch? My stomach tells me when I forget to eat anything. And sometimes even when I don't need to eat. But Jesus says, no, no, no. Don't look like you're missing a meal. Clean your face. Wash yourselves. Don't let anybody know. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. You notice that Jesus uses that phrase a lot? Your Father who sees in secret will reward you. 3 different times he uses the same exact phrase. 6 different times he uses the word secret in our text this morning. You think he might be trying to get us a message? Because it's not that you're supposed to make it a show. It's that you're supposed to keep it a secret. Don't post this. Don't let anybody know. If you really mean it, you won't care who knows. And this is so hard for us, isn't it? Because we live in a very public world, more so than we ever have, with social media and things that we put on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat, all these things. We want people to know what we're doing all the time, right? And it's not all a bad thing, but we're so used to the way that we are cultured to post things and to show things to people and to make sure that people know where we are, check-ins, you know, eating at whatever restaurant, with so-and-so, and all of these different ways that we can promote what we're doing. But Jesus says the true test is if you care for anyone to know when you do righteous acts. And it's hard because we want encouragement, we want approval, we want attention. When you do something good, you want somebody to see it so that they can applaud your efforts, give you a pat on the back, encourage you to do it again, right? But some of the greatest examples of righteousness in the Gospels are from the least likely of people and places. You remember Jesus is sitting in the temple? He's watching people put their money in the offering plates going by. Mark chapter 12 is the story, and the disciples and Jesus are sitting there, and they're watching these guys walk in, these big wads of cash, throwing it into the offering plate, making a big deal about it. And then there's this little widow, comes in very, very quietly, puts in two small coins, all that she had to live on. Those two small coins are worth 1/64th of a denarius, which would be a day's wage. Not even an hour's worth of work. A pitiful amount, if we were to be honest. And yet, do you remember what Jesus says? He says, this woman has put in more than all of those who are contributing because she has put on all that she had to live. This woman has done rightly. Luke chapter 18, two men are praying. Jesus tells a story. One is a Pharisee, and he's praying on the street corner, similar to what we've already discussed, and he's making a big deal about it. He's showing the world of how well he can pray. And he even goes so far as to say, "And Lord, thank you for not making me like this tax collector." Points to the man beside him. And this tax collector, this sinner, this poor man is just humbly praying beside this Pharisee. And Jesus says he won't even look up to heaven when he prays. He has his head down to the ground and he's looking at the floor and he says, "God, be merciful to me, a sinner." You remember which prayer? Jesus says, this man went down to his house justified, the tax collector. These are the examples that Jesus lauds as those which are to be emulated because they were sincere. It wasn't that they used all the right words. It wasn't that they did all of the right things. It was that they didn't care who were watching them. Sincerity is more important than likes and views, compliments and cards, awards and publicity. And you know, for those of us who are on social media, it does provide a kind of a different way of looking at things because oftentimes we post something and we measure the success of that post or that action or that deed that's put on Instagram or Facebook or whatever it is by the number of likes that it gets or the number of comments that it gets. And sociologists have done studies on this, how much it becomes an addictive habit almost to repost something because it got a certain response the first time. But Jesus says, don't post it. Your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Our spiritual success should not be measured by other people's approval or acknowledgement. Often, it's just the opposite. Ruth Harms Calkin was a Christian poet. She began life growing up as a preacher's kid and later married a minister, so she didn't escape the world of ministry. Think about that. She enjoyed being a PK, though. She was not one of those people that just hated life as a preacher's kid, hated ministry and all that kind of thing, never wanted anything to do with it. She loved it. She had a loving father, actually, that helped her grow to love ministry. And when she was a young girl, her father encouraged her to start journaling about her relationship with God, about her thoughts and feelings. And Ruth loved journaling. She found a love for writing that later blossomed into a career and became an accomplished poet and author. And she wrote a poem, "I Wonder," is what it's called. And I stumbled on it years ago, and I've often thought about it since, because it says so well the message that Jesus says in Matthew chapter 6. Listen to this poem from Ruth Harms Calkin. "You know, Lord, how I serve you with great emotional fervor in the limelight. You know how I eagerly speak for you at the woman's club. You know how I effervesce when I get excited to promote a fellowship group. You know my genuine enthusiasm at a Bible study. But how would I react, I wonder, if you pointed to a basin of water and asked me to wash the calloused feet of a bent and wrinkled old woman, day after day, month after month, in a room where nobody saw and nobody knew? What would you do?" You see, God prefers the simple and to the complicated, and the sincere to the showy. The question for us is, are we willing to go that route? Are we willing to do things for years in silence, nobody knowing what we're doing, because that's what God would have us do? A life lived in modesty but sincerity. A life that runs against the grain of our culture, looks for no praise, perhaps, maybe, even our personal desires in looking for affirmation from others. Charles Haddon Spurgeon was a famous Baptist preacher in the late 1800s in London, England. And there's a story that's told of the Spurgeon family that he and his wife would sell but refused to give away eggs that their chickens had laid. Even close relatives who wanted to buy these eggs or wanted to have some eggs were told, "You may have them if you pay for them." You can imagine, as a result, people began to talk, right? "They're so stingy. It's eggs. I mean, many of you give away eggs for free because you're like, I have tons of them. My fridge is full of eggs. Please take some." But the Spurgeons refused to give them away. They accepted criticisms without defending themselves. And only after Mrs. Spurgeon died was the full story revealed. All of those years, the profits from the sale of eggs had gone to support two elderly widows. Because the Spurgeons were unwilling to let their left hand know what their right was doing, they accepted the criticism in silence. In our social media online presence, post everything, tell everyone world, keeping it a secret is difficult. I want to challenge you to do something this week. And I'm sincerely, this is a challenge that I want you to do this week. Do something secretly for someone else without telling anyone. And so you know what that means, right? I'll never know if you did it right. Because I'll never know. Because you'll never tell me. You'll never tell anyone, in fact, because you did it for that person, not for anybody else. And so I sincerely want us to do something this week for someone else and enjoy the fact that you are the only one who knows about it. Isn't that a cool feeling? To watch as someone receives a gift, has something done for them, and they don't have any clue who it is that did it. A couple weeks ago, Abby and I, it was a Friday morning. Fridays are my days off, and so we went to Jerry Lee's for breakfast. Late breakfast, brunch more like, and saw Gary and Bev Jones there and talked a little bit. Enjoyed our time together. They left, and we were sitting there, and our neighbors walked in. And we said, "Hi, you know, how are you?" Kind of caught up for a minute, and then we both went our separate ways and began eating our meals, continued eating our meals. And we lingered a bit. We were enjoying ourselves. They left, and we were the only ones there. And then when it came time to pay, I went up and went to pay for my meal, and she said, "Oh, so-and-so took care of it. And if I told you their name, probably some of you would know who they are, so I'm not going to say." And I just stopped and thought. And that's not the first time that somebody's done that for me, okay? But I just stopped and thought, what a nice gesture for somebody to do that for someone else. And maybe some of you have been in that spot before. Someone has paid for your meal and you didn't know who it was. Or they didn't say anything to you about it because they didn't care. They didn't want you to know. This is the spirit of Matthew chapter 6. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Here in a moment, we'll have a time of invitation where you can respond to the message and ask for prayers, and we invite you to do that. But also in that invitation is an ongoing invitation to the gospel. That if you don't know who this Jesus is, if you're still questioning your following Him, we want you to be able to make that decision this morning if you would like to. We'd love to baptize you this morning. Love to talk to you about confession, repentance, and following. What does it mean to be a disciple? And so if you'd like to do any of those things, we invite you to come as we stand and as we sing.